First Coast Connect with Melissa Ross is sponsored in part by Baptist Health.
What's truly holding the city back when it comes to a vibrant downtown? Good morning. We're live from Studio 5. I'm Melissa Ross, and this is First Coast Connect. Thanks for listening. Just ahead this hour, the five biggest myths about developing downtown. It's live at rjackstoday.org, and we will tick them off one by one with your calls. Let us know what you would like to see changed about downtown. Call us up now, 549-2937. Then later, how you can get covered this month under the Affordable Care Act, that and more ahead. But first this morning, does demolishing old buildings prime the pump for flashy new ones? Is 10,000 residents the magic number necessary to enliven downtown Jacksonville? Is downtown development really as complicated as people say? Well, one local urban core advocate says these are all myths that have been holding the city back for years. Bill Delaney of our partner, The Jackson, is also a contributor at Jacksonville Today, our new vertical, and he's been sharing his thoughts there about downtown. Bill Delaney, always good to talk to you. Thanks for calling in.
Hey, thanks for having me.
And here's our question to callers out there. As we talk about the five biggest myths holding downtown back, what do you think they are? What would you like to see the city do to make downtown a destination? 549-2937. Call us up. Emails to firstcoastconnect@wjct.org. Already getting lots of your tweets at Melissa in Jax and Facebook comments. We'll get to those in a moment. Now, you, of course, are the publisher over at the Jackson Mag, Bill, one of our partners, but you're also contributing some thoughts at jackstoday.org. That is our news site covering the city, and we encourage everyone to subscribe to our newsletter today. It's a free daily newsletter at jackstoday.org. At Jax Today, you have laid out what I think is a really compelling argument, five myths holding back downtown Jacksonville. Let's go through these one by one. Bill Delaney says, myth number one, it's easier to develop an empty lot than adapt an existing building. That has certainly been the way it's been in the city for years, which I think has been terrible. Bill, you know, when they tore down the old Greyhound bus station downtown instead of adapting it and turned it into a parking lot, I thought that just, I'm going to say it, I thought that sucked. When you go up to Savannah, they turned their old Greyhound bus station into a fine dining restaurant that draws people from all over the world. Okay, so let's talk about myth number one. Why does the city think it's better to tear down a building and develop an empty lot than adapt an existing building?
So the reason I think that is it sounds like it makes sense, right? Like that it would be easier to build something totally new if you want, you know, a new use than to try to fit an old building into the new the use that you need. The problem with that is that when you look at downtown Jacksonville, it just does not mesh with reality at all. We have a whole lot of empty lots, perfect places to build new buildings, but we have a pretty low rate of new buildings coming online. And the ones that are coming are largely out in the outskirts of downtown, in Brooklyn and a bit in La Villa. Then the North Bank core and the walkable heart of downtown, there's only a handful of totally new construction projects coming. Meanwhile, there are over a dozen projects that are adapting buildings that already exist within three blocks of James Weldon Johnson Park alone.
Mm-hmm.
So clearly the trend in Jacksonville is not that it's easier to build something new. The trend is that it's easier to adapt an existing building.
And yet we continue to not do that very often. That leads to your myth number two, demolishing a building makes way for new investment. Well, we've seen in real time evidence that that doesn't really work. Now, you write about what you call the Godzilla strategy of urban development, just raising old buildings and then hoping and wishing and praying and crossing our fingers that someone will come in and put something better in their place.
Yeah, and the reason that's a myth, I mean, like anybody can see what tends to happen in downtown Jacksonville is when we demolish an old building, it doesn't lead to some grand new use, it stays an empty lot for years, if not decades. That's the strategy that back in the early 90s, we raised La Villa, hoping that it would lead to something new. It's now 30 years later, and we're only just now starting to see some new construction in La Villa.
30 years?
Yeah.
That's a long time waiting. And it's so frustrating driving around downtown and just seeing that sort of stagnation and with only a few green shoots, you know?
Yeah, you know, and we continue to do it is the unfortunate thing. You know, you look at the Jacksonville Landing, you know, we predicted 3 years ago when the city announced they were going to buy and demolish the landing, we predicted that it was going to be an empty lot for years. We're now almost 3 years, 3 years later, and it's still a grass lot. Its future is still years away, according to the city's documents. So it'll be years before anything is done there.
And you had argued at the Jackson Mag that they should have adaptively reused that existing building.
Yeah, we did. We said the building was structurally sound and that we would be able to do more by working with what we had than demolishing it and starting over. You know, in the very least, it wouldn't have been as difficult to try to find a new use for it and spend all the money to build something totally new if we worked with the bones that were there.
We're talking about the five biggest myths holding back downtown development with Bill Delaney of the Jackson. You can read his thoughts at our website, jackstoday.org, and give us a call, 549-2937. All right, let's move on to myth number three. I love this one. For years and years and years, we've heard retail follows rooftops when it comes to downtown, Bill, and that if we could just get 10,000 people living downtown, that's the magic number of urban density that will give us a truly vibrant downtown. Now, you've crunched these numbers and compared downtown Jacksonville to other downtowns that are roughly equivalent to us, like Tampa, Nashville, other cities. And you're saying, no, we need a lot more than 10,000 people, right?
Yeah, exactly. That's one of those things. I did some digging on this. I couldn't tell where that 10,000 people number even comes from, which isn't a good sign because that suggests it's not coming from some, you know, from some data anywhere. But yeah, it's 10,000 people. The problem is that downtown Jacksonville is so big. It's unusually large. What counts as downtown Jacksonville, the official boundaries, is everything from Brooklyn all the way out to the Stadium District, which are miles apart and not walkable to each other. It's 3.9 square miles, whereas most of our peer cities have a downtown that's about 1 or 2 square miles. And what it really, you know, comes down to is we're looking at the wrong thing. We're not looking at the population density, which means the number of people per square mile. And when you look at that, downtown Jacksonville, even with 10,000 people, is only going to have about 2,500 people per square mile. A Tampa, Orlando, Nashville, Charlotte, Indianapolis, they all have population densities that are 6,000 or 7,000 people, so several times more than we would have even if we got to that number.
Yeah, per square mile, not sort of scattered in different little areas, really packed in. Myth number four,
right.
Yeah, myth number four, a magic silver bullet project will be the incredible magic spark that transforms downtown Jacksonville. So you're saying that for years, political leaders and developers have thought, let's chase this one big shiny object, this one grand slam project that will magically turn downtown around. That has not ever worked out. So then tell us more about this myth and why it's dangerous.
Yeah, so this one it's unfortunate. Because we keep chasing after these huge projects, thinking that this will be the thing that finally gets us over the hump. The problem is that we put so much emphasis on that you know, sometimes it's to the exclusion of other smaller things that we could be doing to move things along incrementally. The one thing that all of these projects, from the Jacksonville Skyway up to the Jaguars yearly pitches for the shipyard. None of them have ever actually turned downtown around, going back decades. You know, and that's not to say that a big project couldn't contribute to downtown, but it's missing what really moves downtown along, and that's clustering a lot of different things all together in a walkable setting, not just relying on one huge thing to come along and save us.
Mm-hmm. All right. And then this is the killer myth, number five. Downtown revitalization is really hard and takes a lot of study, time, and money. I want to read a little bit of your piece that we're running at jackstoday.org. You write, the premise of this myth is that downtown development is like really hard. To hope to accomplish anything, the Chamber of Commerce must first plan a leadership to allow top corporate and civic leaders to visit a city to learn their best practices and cutting-edge ideas. Then we've got to sponsor a study telling us what to do. Then another study of how we're doing. This myth may be the most detrimental of all, as it leads to inertia. Jacksonville has spent millions of dollars and years studying issues that our peer cities have already figured out. The problem isn't the studies, it's that we never end up following their best recommendations. Bill, what you're saying is we don't need a lot of fancy chamber trips, which, by the way, a lot of people listening to this show right now have gone on. No offense to any of them. I'm sure they enjoyed the trips. But you're saying that the best way to build a vibrant downtown isn't really that hard, that it's common sense. We just need to do it.
Right. It's there's a lot of smaller, comparatively inexpensive things that we could be doing to move the needle now, as opposed to waiting for, you know, a study in a year and then another study after that. Yeah, you know, we looked at Lakeland, Florida, and they had an issue where they had converted their main street into a two-way street, which is something downtown Jacksonville could do. Well, they just, in May of this year, launched a project. It only cost $115,000 to allow restaurants there to expand their sidewalk out in front to allow for cafe seating. And by November, they had totally transformed that strip. It's now much more vibrant, much more pedestrian-friendly, a lot more active. And they did that with only $115,000 in the span of a couple of months. Jacksonville has spent more money than that on one study that doesn't end up resulting in much change.
I think that's what's so frustrating for those of us that have watched this kind of thing go on for so many years. Let's go to some calls now for Bill Delaney of The Jackson. The five biggest myths holding this city back and drawing people downtown. 549-2937, Rusty on the West Side. Hi, Rusty. Good morning.
Hi, Melissa. Well, to make matters worse. So it seems that my perception is that the demand for 1970s-style office space has crashed, and that if the for the urban core here, and if they do want to build it, you know, because of technology, of course. So, but if they do want to build it, they think to themselves, it seems, hey, you know, there's Deerwood. There is, you know, why not just go straight to Ponte Vedra or Nocatee? That would be a nice place for my office space. And in a heartbeat, it seems.
Thanks, Rusty.
Secondly,
oh, go ahead. Finish your thought.
I'm just, the parking is, property owners have kind of a death grip on that down here. And the Skyway or light rail.
Well, you know what? Let me push back on the parking thing, because when people call in about this issue, they typically bring that up. There's a ton of parking downtown. There are parking garages on almost every corner. You just have to be willing to drive into a garage and pay a little money. And a lot of people, for whatever reason, they don't want to do that. If they don't see easy, free parking, they think there's no parking. You know what I mean, Rusty?
Oh, absolutely. You're right. There's a lot of space. Nobody likes it. Nobody likes the garages or the parking situation down here. That's all.
Yeah. So. Thanks, Rusty. Bill Delaney.
Yeah. So, but touch on the parking thing, you know, you can look at a vibrant downtown of pretty much any scope, from Asheville, North Carolina, with 300,000 people, to New York City with millions. One thing that they have in common is that they do not have good parking.
Right.
And they're a lot more vibrant than
But that's not preventing people from coming in. Yeah, yeah.
As far as the building thing, that is partly true. Yeah, there's a much lower demand for office space, especially in those, you know, kind of Class A, you know, very big towers these days. However, what we're finding is that by having them there and putting in some incentives and working with developers, that a lot of them are moving to be adapted into other uses. There's now projects to turn them into apartments. You know, it's relatively, you know, it's compared to building an entirely new thing, the interior demolition is a lot less expensive than that. We now have, like I said, over a dozen projects that are all in these buildings that a lot of people would have considered obsolete within three blocks of James Weldon Johnson Park alone.
Ryan is in Arlington. Hi, Ryan.
Hey, good morning. Hey, so I've been in Jacksonville for 5 years now. Prior to that, I mean, I'm from Florida originally, but I was in the Army and I traveled around and have been a lot of places, and Columbus, Georgia was one where I actually got stationed there twice, and they kind of revitalized their downtown. But one of the things that I think about, one of the reasons I don't go downtown much is, I got a family. I don't even know what I would go and do. And to your guest's point, I think clustering buildings is important and businesses, because, like, right now, why would I make the trip into downtown if I've got nothing to do?
Mm-hmm.
And if I had more small businesses, like things to do together, like if I want to go shopping, well, now I go to the St. John's Town Center. If I want, you know what I mean? Like, I don't even know what I would go into downtown for. And I think the more businesses come together, because the other thing I don't want to do is walk everywhere. If I could go visit four or five places with my family, I think that would be the draw.
The draw. Thanks, Ryan. Yeah, I think that is in line with what Bill is saying. Less on the west side. Less, you're on the air.
Good morning. I just had a question regarding consolidation. I was a teenager when Jacksonville consolidated, and I remember the difficulties that we had. And I just had a question is, do the people in the know, are they still sold on the idea of consolidation, or has anybody ever considered turning Jacksonville into five different cities?
I don't think that's on the table, Les, but thanks for the idea. Bill.
Yeah, that's something that comes up a lot. I do think that consolidation has kind of disguised the level to which the urban core, the neighborhoods around downtown, declined in population over the years. If the city, you know, if it was still the old city, we would have seen that and potentially started working against it. But at the same time, consolidation allows us to take money from the suburbs and reinvest it in downtown. And there's lots of examples of us doing that. We haven't necessarily done it consistently, but that is a possibility with consolidation. The other thing is, when you look at other consolidated cities, they mostly do not have lagging downtown. You know, Nashville, Indianapolis, Denver, Philadelphia, New York is consolidated with five counties. Those are all places that have very vibrant urban centers.
Mm. And at the beaches. Hi, Ann. Thanks for holding. You're on the air.
Yes. It seems when I'm watching any programs about or on television about visiting towns and so on, it's always the asking the question, what about the older part of town? This always seems to be attraction. So why not revitalize what we have, any attractive buildings, and make that a center? Even if it's a small street, it always seems to be a point that attracts people to see just that little bit of history and the quaintness and the buildings that we have,
yeah,
which we still do, and making that a center.
Thanks, Anne. And you have such a lovely voice, by the way, Anne. thanks for the call. You know, Bill Delaney, there is some of that going on, the efforts to revitalize a trio of historic buildings downtown called the Laura Street Trio. That's one example.
Yeah, you know, and there's, you know, a lot of them. You know, the 12 buildings I mentioned around James Weldon Johnson Park, those are all within about a quarter mile of each other. So once those get online and you start to see more retail on the street, you know, we very well could. You know, we're working our way towards having that kind of a center now. You know, Laura Street Trio is a perfect example that's one of the buildings that's there. You know, we also are seeing the success of that in some of the other neighborhoods around downtown. You know, Riverside, San Marco have made bank, by selling themselves as a historic, walkable community.
Lauren at the Beaches. Hi, Lauren.
Hey, I actually used to live downtown, and when I lived there for 3 years, our biggest issue was trying to get into a grocery store or like a Target or anything. Everything is far away, and we used to always joke that we thought one of the Laura Street Trio buildings would actually be perfect for a large Target that had the grocery store in it. And just knew that something like that would get more people to live downtown, because just trying to drive out of downtown to go get groceries or go get, you know, something for your household was just such a pain. Mm-hmm. So to see something like that, I feel like would bring more people into downtown.
Thanks for that, Lauren. You know, we're getting tweets and Facebook comments, Bill, about how a decent downtown grocery store could do a lot.
Yeah, good. And fortunately, there's actually a couple of them in the works. A couple of those adaptive reuse projects have downtown, like bodega-style or small grocery stores. There is, of course, the formerly a Winn-Dixie. I think it's a Harvey's now, out on kind of the edge of downtown. So, like, developers are seeing that, and they are responding. You know, now that there's, you know, not now that we have finally kind of hit the breaking point with our local developers. They are recognizing that need.
We're getting a lot of other tweets and Facebook comments, pretty cynical ones, Bill. Here's one. It's not that people want to liven up downtown to its full potential. It's more about real estate for private developers at the expense of poor residents. Consolidation has only benefited one group. He says, here's a comment on Facebook from Robert. Tax breaks and building permits all over the city while downtown festers. The good old boys are getting their piece of it. Basically, this is a running theme on this show, whether we talk about downtown or a host of other issues, Bill. The perception among a lot of voters out there that a small elite minority of white men, conservative white men, is running things here, getting most of the benefits, and holding back progress. That is certainly a narrative many people out there share in their minds. What do you think?
Oh, yeah. You know, it's easy to see why somebody would be kind of cynical over this. And it's because we've seen not a huge amount of progress in the last 30 or 40 years. You know, I think that if it would be a different story if we were seeing progress. Now, at the same time, I'll say that a lot of the people who are making the investments in downtown now that I think most people want to see are developers. They're local developers. You got Corner Lot Development, Augustine Development, JWB are all out there in downtown, and they're putting their money where their mouth is. But, yeah, I mean, it's definitely easy to see why somebody would be, you know, it would be cynical and get down about downtown's progress when we haven't seen consistent progress, you know, really at any point in decades.
So then what are your thoughts about how the Downtown Investment Authority is working on these issues?
Well, I think that they are the right idea, that we needed something that could kind of carry between mayoral administrations. That's a problem that we had had for a long time. We would have one mayor who would make a big commitment to downtown, and then the next one would want to do something totally different and not continue to build on it. And DIA will allow us to have some kind of continuity. Now, I do think that there's a lot of this stuff that we just talked about that would be better for them to tackle. You know, like we've had discussions about turning streets two ways for years. Well, you know, that's not an extraordinarily complicated feat. You know, that's something that a lot of cities have done and are continuing to do. You know, I would like to see them tackle more of kind of the small, common sense, incremental improvements, because those are the things that over time really add up.
I would encourage everyone in the meantime to read Bill's thoughts at jackstoday.org. and subscribe to our daily free newsletter delivered straight to your inbox, bringing you up to date on all of the biggest news and notes from around the 904. Bill Delaney of The Jackson, it's always good to talk to you. Thanks.
Hey, thanks for having me.
And much more still ahead later. Open enrollment is up now. Get covered under the Affordable Care Act. We'll tell you how, but up next.
So it's basically a peer-to-peer contest where families, businesses, community organizations, whoever, can start a campaign to support HabitJacks during the holidays. And the idea is to raise money so that we can select a family in the year to come, get them in a house for Christmas.
We'll tell you how HabitJacks is working to get local families a home for Christmas after this. Welcome back. Well, this holiday season, you can take part in the HabitJacks Home for Christmas Challenge. The idea is to hold a competition that will raise enough money to build a home for a local family by Christmas of next year. Whether you're a family, a church, a business, or even just an individual, you can participate by setting up a team and encouraging people to join your team in supporting the HabitJacks campaign. HabitJacks is the local chapter of Habitat for Humanity. Now, Chris Folds is VP of Fund Development and Community Engagement at HabitJacks, and he told me all about it. Hey, Chris. Good to talk to you. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you for having me. Really appreciate the opportunity.
So tell us what's going on at HabitJacks. This Home for Christmas Challenge sounds really cool.
Thank you. Thank you. Yeah, it's a new thing that we dreamed up for this year. You know, we had talked about, we've always considered our builds our events. But we'd been thinking about potentially having an event, but obviously that's a difficult thing to pull off these days.
Mm-hmm.
So we came up with this concept to sort of get people excited about the holiday season. Obviously, the idea of home and Christmas is they're very intertwined, and so it's basically a peer-to-peer contest where families, businesses, community organizations, whoever, can start a campaign to support HabitJacks during the holidays. And the idea is to raise money so that we can, select a family in the year to come and sort of get them in a house for Christmas. We anticipate there'll be hopefully a lot of campaigns raising money that will all go toward this house next year. So, essentially what people do is they let us know that they want to participate, and they could visit habitjacks.org/Christmas to do so. So you sign up with on a pretty easy form on the website under support a campaign. And when you do that, you get what I hope is a pretty nice looking Christmas themed yard sign with a gingerbread house on it and everything, and a QR code that takes you to the website where, you can choose what campaign to support. And, so essentially it's people, businesses, whomever can start this campaign, raise money for HabitJacks, and whoever raises the most money, we have a really cool first prize. Miles Jack, the Jaguars stud linebacker, mm-hmm. he's joined us as an ambassador, and his mom, Lasagna, is on our board, and the campaign that raises the most money for HabitJacks will get a meet and greet with Miles.
And yeah, Miles Jack wasn't down, as we all know, right?
Yes, that was. I was like the first thing I said when they came in to meet us, and they were very nice about it. But I could tell it was like, "Wow, you're original, Mr. Paul."
But people can add to the Miles Jack memes by getting their picture taken with him if they get involved in this HabitJacks campaign. Now, let's be clear: this isn't building a house. You're trying to get companies, churches, individuals to raise money to build a house. That's the Christmas challenge.
Exactly. And we hope we'll get enough you know, competing campaigns and people interested in this, that we will be able to, if not in whole, come very, very close to funding a home
for a family.
Yeah.
Now, this is all about your effort at Habajax to create more affordable housing in our community, which is so important, that it's so needed. Can you tell us about some of the other things you're doing in that area?
Oh, definitely. So, you know, when the, you know, pandemic got going, like a lot of folks, we had to close down our office to visitors and suspend our volunteer program temporarily and everything. But our construction team kept on building. We felt like, you know, a lot of the clients in our pipeline had done everything that we asked them for. And it seemed like, you know, when everybody was telling us, go to your home, that's the safest place to be, that we owed it to people to keep building. And things have slowed down a little bit, you know, with supply chain issues and some of the things that I know that people are very familiar with, you know, these days. But we, in large part, have kept right on going, kept on chugging through the whole thing. And in fact, we, you know, you probably have seen a little bit about this. We actually just completed our first tiny home community.
Yeah.
So over on the west side off of Wiley Road, the tiny houses on Navajo. We cut the ribbon on that last month. It's a little different for us. We have not built tiny homes before. I know that's something that people really fascinated. People were just so into this idea of tiny houses, and they're about 600 square feet. There's 50 of them in the development. The whole thing was supported by Dolores Barr Weaver, who's been an amazing friend to us. And it's a rental community, which we haven't done before. So, you know, we're all about home ownership. This is a new way for us to meet the, you know, the rather urgent need for housing in the community. Rents in Jacksonville have gone up 23% since the start of 2020.
Yeah,
it's
a huge issue, and you're putting Miles Jack to work on this too. Tell us about My Cause, My Cleats.
Yeah, so that's something we're really excited about. We have not been able to participate in this before, but every year the NFL designates one game where players wear cleats that are, you know, custom painted for a game, for a cause that they care about. And Miles' game against the Rams, I think on December the 5th, is going to be wearing Habajax cleats, and it was unbelievable. We got to meet with Marcus, who is the like this renowned painter of cleats, which I mean, I didn't even know that was a thing, but it's so cool. He's painted them for, you know, players that have played in the Super Bowl and all this stuff. And he sat down with us with our team and with Lasagna, Miles's mom, and we basically told him the Habajax story, how we've built, you know, served over 2,300 families, and you know, we've, you know, build houses one way when we started, and now we have all these different house styles and everything. It's going to create these custom cleats that are going to really pop on TV.
That's great.
That promote Habajax. So yeah, it's really cool. And then I guess the cleats get auctioned
later on,
raise money.
So Everybody needs to go to habajax.org because they want you to create a team and be part of the Habajax Home for Christmas Challenge. Check it out. Be part of a great organization. Habajax.org, the local chapter of Habitat for Humanity. And he is Chris Folds, VP of Fund Development and Community Engagement at Habajax. Have a great Christmas, Chris, and thanks for being with us.
Thank you, Melissa. Have a great one.
Well, open enrollment is underway for health insurance policies under the Affordable Care Act. Advocates call it a time to get covered and stay covered. Laura Packard is the Executive Director of Healthcare Voter and joins us now. Hey, Laura.
Good morning.
Good to talk to you. So healthcare.gov is the place to go in Florida to get a policy under the ACA because the state, of course, declined to set up its own healthcare exchange. And that's ironic considering, I believe, Florida still has the greatest number of signups under the Affordable Care Act, correct?
Yes, over 2 million Floridians were signed up as of this year.
Wow. Okay, so let's talk about this. It can be a little confusing for people the first time they try to go through this process. Lead us through it.
Well, you can start by going to healthcare.gov, and you can do window shopping if you're not yet ready to purchase a plan. But if you have any questions, if you're not sure what plan is best for you, if you go to healthcare.gov, you can find local help to help you. And under the Biden administration, there's more funds than ever going to Floridian groups to have local folks help answer your questions.
Okay. And tell us about Healthcare Voter and why you've gotten involved in this.
Well, I am a cancer survivor, and the insurance I had for the Affordable Care Act saved my life. So this is personal for me, making sure as many Americans as possible get the health insurance they need.
Yeah, I mean, this really is an issue that cuts across a lot of different constituencies. And over time, the Affordable Care Act and the idea of it has grown more politically popular. There have been dozens and dozens of attempts to undo this benchmark legislation, but they've all failed. It is the law of the land, and it is the only way for millions of Americans to get covered in a way that's affordable. Now, what's your response to those who have concerns that they can't afford it?
Well, they should go to healthcare.gov and check out their options, because even if in the past they have not been able to afford a plan, thanks to the American Rescue Plan, which was passed earlier this year, policies are cheaper than ever. And also, pay attention to what Washington is doing right now, because they are working on the Build Back Better bill. And if that goes through, then people in Florida, especially, that have not been able to get health insurance because they make too little an amount of money to qualify for Medicaid, but they don't qualify for ACA either. The people that fall into the Medicaid gap, over 2 million Americans, and many of those are Floridians, they will finally be able to get health insurance coverage.
And didn't the American Rescue Plan Act, the first big piece of legislation coming out of the Biden administration, also help in this effort?
Absolutely. And those subsidies are in effect for this year and next year. So like I mentioned before, go to healthcare.gov and check out your options, because you may be pleasantly surprised.
As the costs drop and the benefits increase, more Americans shopping the marketplace at healthcare.gov are expected to sign up. What are some of the enrollment projections? Can you share that with us?
Well, we're not really sure yet, because of there's more money than ever being spent on marketing and outreach to let people know about their options and talk them through it. So it's a little early, but so far there over a million people have signed up just as open enrollment started November 1st.
With open enrollment underway, here in Florida, of course, as you mentioned, we have the highest number of signups. It's my understanding Florida Blue has the biggest number of policies in the state at healthcare.gov. But there are lots of choices, lots of different tiers of policies. And there are sometimes sign-up events that go on so that people can have a navigator lead them through the process. How important are the navigators in your view?
Well, I think health insurance can be confusing, and especially when there are a lot of options for you to figure out what is the best policy for your situation. So I think it's great to talk with somebody and help figure out what is best for your family. I personally work with a broker every year to figure out the best situation for me, too. So it is free to use this help, so please use it.
Now, open enrollment is up now. The Biden administration extended the open enrollment period to 10 weeks. Is that right? So people have a little more time to look at healthcare.gov and try to figure out what might work for them? Talk about that.
Yes, there's two different deadlines to keep in mind. The first deadline, December 15th, is for coverage that starts January 1st next year. So if you want coverage starting January 1st, the beginning of the year, you need to sign up by December 15th. But the second deadline is January 15th. So if you want coverage at all next year, you must have signed up by January 15th.
You know, as I look at this, it's really remarkable to see that one-third of the total signups for Obamacare or the Affordable Care Act come from Florida. There are so many people in this state, Laura, who are working, who are providing for their families, but they don't have health insurance provided at their job, and this is the only option for them.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And I am especially excited to see what Congress is working on that will cover the million Floridians that can't afford health insurance right now, that'll be finally filling in Medicaid gap.
Right. Now let's talk about that a little bit more before we let you go. Florida is one of the states that decided not to expand Medicaid, and talk about how that impacts enrollment at healthcare.gov here.
Well, the way the Affordable Care Act was designed, it was designed for the people that make the least amount of money to go on Medicaid in their states, which tends to have more services than the ACA. So the original idea was that so many millions of Americans would get Medicaid instead of the Affordable Care Act. But because of a Supreme Court decision, instead of it being mandatory for states, it became optional. And Florida's governor and conservative state legislature refused to expand Medicaid, leaving millions in the cold. But Congress is working on an alternate method. So in states like Florida, where DeSantis and the legislature refused to do it, there would be a federal option instead where low-income Floridians would be able to get an ACA plan at $0.
It's healthcare.gov, open enrollment up now, and it is extended several weeks to enroll for a health insurance policy under the Affordable Care Act. Check it out, folks. Laura Packard, Executive Director of Healthcare Voter. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
And in a moment, we're going to check in on both the Jacksonville Historical Society and Intuition Aleworks, which is right across the street from them, basically. We'll be right back.
China has announced a new 5-year plan for its movies. Step one, make sure every Cineplex has at least one theater that's devoted to patriotic films.
We've been seeing things realigning to those good old socialist core values. This almost a further doubling down on a lot of that.
Why Chinese filmgoers seem to like government-sponsored blockbusters. Our story on the world.
This afternoon at 3, here on WJCT News 89.9.
I'm Peter O'Dowd. From offshore wind energy projects in the Atlantic to wind farms in the Midwest and in the desert, a once novel energy source is now championed by politicians on both sides of the aisle. The answer to U.S. energy needs could be, as a great poet once said, blowing in the wind. That's next time on Here and Now.
today at 2 on WJCT News 89.9.
On the next Fresh Air, on day 2 of our 3-day tribute to the brilliant composer and lyricist Stephen Sondheim, we feature the interview I recorded with him after the publication of his collection of lyrics and the stories behind them. His Broadway shows include Company, Folly, Sweeney Todd, Sunday in the Park with George, and Into the Woods. He died last Friday. Join us.
Tomorrow at noon on WJCT News 89.9.
What happens if the Supreme Court overturns Roe v. Wade? That question is front of mind for many Americans as the Supreme Court hears arguments in what some have called the most important abortion case in a generation. We reflect on Roe's legacy and assess whether the court is poised to overturn the landmark 50-year-old ruling. That's next time on 1A.
Today, starting at 10 on WJCT News 89.9.
Welcome back. It's a holiday tradition. The 19th annual Gingerbread Extravaganza kicks off Saturday at the Jacksonville Historical Society. CEO Alan Bliss is on the line to give us a quick preview. Hey, Alan.
Good morning, Melissa. How are you?
I'm great. Good to talk to you. These gingerbread houses people can come check out at the Historical Society are nothing short of astounding. Tell us what we're going to see.
Well, we think Jacksonville needs some gingerbread, and we are bringing it back. This is the 19th year for the Gingerbread Extravaganza, and again, we have over 40 original edible creations on display. The opening date is December 4th. We run through December 22nd this year. We look forward to welcoming people at the event. We have a variety of scheduled slots available. You can make reservations online through our website, www.jackshistory.org. Pricing is $10 for adults, $5 for children's 4 to 12, and children under 4 are free. We also have senior and military discounts. And this year, I should say, we have 22 creations that are fabricated by first-time builders. We also have a display created by a group that has been building now in their 14th year. So we have a mixture of newcomers and veterans.
And what happens to these gingerbread houses are made by a lot of talented local people. What happens when it's all over? What do you do with all of the gingerbread?
Most of the people who really put a lot into them want to come get them and take them back. So we have a recovery day when people can come retrieve their homes. Otherwise, they're available for donation.
All right. Check it out, everybody. Downtown in the sports complex, the 19th annual Gingerbread Extravaganza at the Jacksonville Historical Society. It's a lot of fun to bring the kids to this. Alan Bliss, have fun with it, and thank you.
Thank you, Melissa. Have a great day.
You too. Now, right down the street from the Historical Society, Intuition Ale Works is celebrating something, too. Their 11th anniversary this weekend with a lot of fun and some live music, too. Ben Davis is founder and owner at Intuition. Hey, Ben.
Hey, how are you? Good morning.
Good morning. Okay, great to talk to you. Now, you're celebrating 11 years, your fifth year in the current location on Bay Street. You've got a free event coming up and a concert. This sounds like a lot of fun. Tell us all about it.
Sure. I mean, I think in some ways we're trying to make up for last year. Last year was our 10th year anniversary, and we couldn't do a whole lot because of COVID. So this year, you know, we're really stepping up a notch. Yeah, we have a free concert starting at 2. Music starts at 2. We have Mike Woolley from the Drive-By Truckers doing his solo act. We're going to have barbecue. We're going to have a bunch of limited release beers. We do our anniversary IPA once a year. It's a unique IPA. It's Brettanomyces, which is a different kind of non-traditional yeast strain and just gives the IPA a different flavor profile. And then we're also going to have our bourbon barrel aged stout called Underdark. We're doing actually a Manhattan cocktail inspired version of that, and then we'll have a bunch of other limited release beers. And then if you're, you know, a glutton for punishment, you can stay and watch the Jags game.
yeah, you're going to have it on the big screen, and people can drown their sorrows if the Jags lose, which given this year's record and is likely. Now, let's talk about the Beer Hall, which you opened recently. This is a cool new concert venue downtown.
Yeah, I mean, we're all big music fans at the brewery, and when the opportunity arose for us to increase our space in the building that we're in and use it as a private event space and then also for a concert hall, you know, we really took advantage of it. It's been a lot of fun. We've had some really cool bands, and we have a lot of really cool bands coming up in the future, so, you know, we're really excited about it.
Yeah, and it's a milestone for any business to celebrate 11 years. You've grown a lot over the years. You made it through the pandemic. What are your thoughts about this little over a decade?
I mean, it's pretty crazy. I kind of joke that one of the ways I remember how old the brewery is I have to remember how old my youngest son is because he's 11 also. So it's kind of, you know, it's just kind of crazy to think of that, just that we've been around that long. But it's also just really rewarding when we've got folks that have been with you since, you still have folks with you, you know, that have been with us since day one. That's really cool. So it's been a lot of fun. It's definitely, you know, small business ownership's a challenge. You know, there are some challenges with being downtown also, but I mean, it's been a lot of fun.
Yeah. And then after the concert Sunday, you've got a full lineup of concerts at the Beer Hall people need to check out as well.
Yes, they do. We got a lot of stuff coming up, and we still have some bands that we haven't announced yet that we're trying to finalize the deals with. So the spring's going to be awesome.
And this is a free all ages show Sunday in the Beer Hall at Intuition Ale Works. A free event as they celebrate their 11th anniversary starts at noon, music starting at 2. The Beer Hall is at the corner of A. Philip Randolph and Forsyth. That's their dedicated concert venue and event space. Come on out, celebrate their anniversary IPA and some other beers, and enjoy Mike Cooley of the Drive-By Truckers as Intuition Ale Works has a lot of fun this weekend in the sports complex. Ben Davis, always good to talk to you. He's the founder and owner. Have fun, and thanks for being a good neighbor to us here at WJCT.
Yep. You're welcome, and thanks for talking to us, and we're looking forward to this weekend.
So lots of fun this weekend, folks. Enjoy whatever you do, and thanks for listening. Thanks also to senior producer Heather Schatz, director Isabella Da Silva, associate producer Catherine Hobbs, editorial director Jessica Palumbo, and news editor Randy Roguski. And I'm Melissa Ross. We'll be right back here again at 9 a.m. tomorrow for our Friday Media Roundtable. Until then, make it a great day.
Support for First Coast Connect is provided by Baptist Health and the North Florida TPO.